This is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Gregory Stockel, Dan Novak, and Jill Robbins. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Scientists in Chile have discovered the bones of a dinosaur they say used its unusual tail as a deadly weapon. Researchers say the dog-sized creature had a tail weapon unlike those seen on any other animal. The tail had a series of blades on each side that could be used to cut its enemies. At first, the scientists thought the plant-eating dinosaur might have belonged to a similar species called Stegosaurus. But after studying pieces of skull and examining DNA, the scientists decided the dinosaur must be from a new species. The researchers named the dinosaur Stegaros because of its similarities to Stegosaurus. The find is described in a study recently published in Nature. Alex Vargas was the lead writer of the study. He told the Associated Press that the animal's blade-like tail could be used as a cutting weapon similar to those used by Aztec warriors. "It's a really unusual weapon," said Vargas, a scientist with the University of Chile. He said information on the species should be added to books on prehistoric animals for children. "It just looks crazy," Vargas added. The bones, or fossil, is from about 72 million to 75 million years ago, the team said. Researchers believe the animal is part of the ankylosaur family of dinosaurs. They are believed to have walked the earth throughout the Jurassic and Cretaceous periods. The scientists say the dinosaur must have been a rare Southern Hemisphere member of the family. Vargas called it the lost family branch of the ankylosaur. The fossil appears to be an adult based on the way the bones are connected, Vargas said. It was found with its front end flat on its stomach. The back end sat at a lower level, almost as if caught in sand, he added. The tail was probably used as a defense against large predators. Vargas said the animal's enemies were also likely persuaded not to attack by armor-like bones that made Stegaros chewy. "Not only is this a really bizarre tail, but it is from far southern Chile," said McAllister College biologist Christy Curry Rogers. Rogers said discoveries of that kind of animal have not been made in the area before. She added that the finding shows that scientists are just scratching the surface when it comes to understanding the many kinds of dinosaur species. I'm Brian Lynn. Recent arguments before the United States Supreme Court signaled that the more conservative justices may greatly limit abortion rights in the U.S. The decision on Mississippi's 15-week abortion ban will decide if the court's former rulings on abortion, including Roe v. Wade, will remain. If the court upholds Mississippi's law, it means individual states will be able to legislate abortion laws. In 2020, the Associated Press found that 69% of voters in the presidential election said the Supreme Court should leave Roe v. Wade in place. Just 29% said the court should overturn the decision. While Americans will likely not know the high court's ruling until June, here is where public opinion stands on abortion. Overall, when asking Americans if abortion should be legal or illegal, a majority of Americans side with abortion rights. In June, a study by the Associated Press and NORC Center for Public Affairs Research found that 57% of Americans said abortion should be legal in all or most cases. It found that 43% said it should be illegal in all or most cases. Few Americans think abortion should be either legal or illegal in all cases. Americans were also asked if abortion should be permitted if the woman's or the child's health is seriously at risk, or if the pregnancy is a result of rape or incest. Most Americans say abortions should be permitted in those cases, including majorities of conservatives. The Mississippi law makes few exceptions in the case of medical emergencies or a severe abnormality in the child. But support for abortion rights greatly decreases for a woman who does not want to be pregnant for any reason. About half of Americans think abortion should be permitted in that case. The court's former decisions, known as precedents, have given states the ability to restrict abortion rights after the point where a fetus could survive without the mother, or about 23 weeks. In last week's argument, Chief Justice John Roberts said a 15-week ban is not far from 23 weeks. He asked, "If it really is an issue about choice, why is 15 weeks not enough time?" Similar to support for abortion rights, the APNORC Center study showed a clear majority of Americans, 61%, said abortion in the first trimester should be legal in all or most cases. However, a majority of 54% said abortion in the third trimester should always be illegal, and another 26% said it should usually be illegal. I'm Gregory Stockel.
As the number of English learners in American schools continues to rise, it is not just students that are going to need more help. Parents and families that do not speak English also need support, say school officials. Parents need to feel like they can be actively involved in their child's schooling, regardless of any language barriers. And it is on us as a district to create that space for families to be involved, said Leonor Vargas. She is an administrator with the Austin Independent School District in Texas, where almost 30% of the student population are English learners. She and Principal Janet Huger Johnson of the East New York Elementary School of Excellence shared their experiences last week in an online discussion with the news organization Education Week. It is important for parents and families to be able to communicate in their desired language. Johnson said her school, for example, uses a phone app that permits teachers and administrators to send messages in English that will translate to the parent's language. And when the parent responds, the message is translated back into English. She added that sometimes the school will need to hire people in the community to help with translation.
Beyond language barriers, parents and family members should feel like they are part of the school community, the officials said. That means getting to know every family through online or in-person meetings and creating space for parents from similar backgrounds to communicate with each other about their concerns. Understanding cultural differences is also important. Vargas shared a story from her district where some Afghan students were not eating food provided by the school. After speaking with the families, the teachers found the students were not eating because they were unfamiliar with the food. So Vargas and other school teachers will soon hold an event where families can taste the food and know what their children are eating. Schools will also start sending home translated menus. Schools can find value in education through their culture, Johnson said. Parents that do not speak English need to feel that they are equal to any other parent in the school community, they said. And if schools do not offer support to families, the results can cause problems. A recent investigation by the Associated Press found that schools in the city of Philadelphia often provide little support to immigrant parents. Some parents said the school system offered poor translation services. Mandy is a parent in Philadelphia who speaks Mandarin. Her child has special needs. She told the AP that during one meeting, a telephone translator said she did not know anything about special education and refused to translate. Recently, she had to bring a friend to the school to translate during a school meeting. It feels like immigrant parents are deliberately excluded and pushed to the margins, Mandy said.
Students in English education programs are a large and growing population in American schools. The U.S. Department of Education says that the number of English learners increased by more than 1 million from 2000 to 2020. 43 states saw increases in English learners over that time. And U.S. Census data showed that the number of people who speak languages other than English at home increased by more than 8 million over the last 10 years. Almost 22% of American households speak a foreign language at home. The Department of Education Office of Civil Rights requires schools to provide translation services to families in whatever language they speak. Schools must not use other students to translate or use other untrained workers. In Philadelphia, however, the AP found that schools often use students for translation. Olivia Ponce, another parent in Philadelphia, also had problems with language. She tried to talk to a school official when her daughter was being bullied at school. The school's translator was not available, so the official had another Spanish-speaking student translate. The student did not translate well, and the discussion went poorly. Ponce kept her daughter home for a week. "I didn't know we had rights and that they couldn't take students out of class to help translate for us. They never told us this," Ponce told the AP. "What I want is for parents to know that when their children start an education, they have a right to be a part of it." I'm Dan Novak.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. America's 18th president, Ulysses Grant, was elected to his second term in 1872. Grant had led the Union Army of the North to victory over the Confederate Army of the South during the Civil War. He easily won the presidency in 1868 in the first election held after the war. Now he would spend four more years as president of the United States. Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant tell about Grant's second term in office.
Grant's first administration was marked by dishonesty and shameful events. The situation grew much worse after he won a second term. Grant himself was not involved directly, but his administration suffered because of his ties to those who were involved. Soon after Grant's re-election, for example, there was a serious incident that involved many of his supporters in Congress. The Union Pacific Railroad Company had helped build a railroad across the American West to California. The cost of building the railroad was very high. The company got large amounts of aid from the government. Not all this aid came honestly. An investigation showed that leading members of Congress and even the vice president received shares of ownership in the company for free or at low cost. In exchange, they voted to use federal money to help build the railroad.
A few months later, members of Congress voted a pay raise for themselves and the executive branch of government. The pay raise would be retroactive. This meant the extra money would be paid for the 2 years already passed. Newspapers and citizens raised a storm of protest. Some lawmakers were afraid they would not be reelected, so they refused to accept the pay raise. Within 6 months, another shameful incident was uncovered. This one involved Jay Cook, one of the richest bankers in the country. He also was a good friend of President Grant. In 1869, Cook began raising money to build another railroad across America's West. He planned to sell $100 million worth of railroad bonds. Many people invested all the money they had in Cook's railroad, but Cook was unable to sell as many bonds as he expected. Soon, his banks had no money left. They could return no money to the thousands of people who had bought railroad bonds.
People hurried to other banks to withdraw their savings. Within hours, many of these other banks had to close. They, too, were out of money. Within a month, more than 5,000 banks across the country failed and closed their doors. This created an economic crisis. The New York Stock Exchange closed for 10 days. Factories closed. Thousands of people lost their jobs. Investigations showed that many of the banks that failed had violated banking laws. The laws often were not enforced because so many bankers had given money to the ruling Republican Party.
Other incidents followed. One of the biggest was called the Whiskey Ring. It involved a group of whiskey producers and some high officials who were friends of President Grant. Together, they found a way not to pay taxes on their whiskey. One of Grant's close advisors was at the center of the incident. A grand jury found him not guilty of any crime. However, it charged several hundred whiskey producers and government officials with illegal activities. President Grant had done nothing illegal, but the Whiskey Ring incident increased public feeling that there was no honesty in the White House. The feeling grew that Grant was a failure.
These incidents took place during a time of intense social and political change in the United States. The period after the Civil War was a time of industrial revolution and business growth. Most of this growth was taking place in the North. Before the Civil War, most businesses were small. Now, there were many companies with large numbers of workers. The companies also had large numbers of owners. They sold shares of ownership to anyone with enough money to buy.
A few men rose to positions of great power in business. In the steel industry, for example, there was Andrew Carnegie. He came to the United States as a boy from Scotland. He took a low-paying job in a factory that produced cotton cloth. He worked hard. In time, he earned enough money to take control of an iron factory. Carnegie soon built another factory. This one produced steel with a new technology. The system worked well. Soon, he was earning more than $1 million a year. He competed fiercely with other steel companies. He pressured railroads to transport his steel for lower prices than his competitors. And he cut his prices to force other steelmakers out of the business. Before long, Andrew Carnegie was the unquestioned leader of America's steel industry. His position gave him great power over the economy of the whole country.
What Carnegie did for the steel industry, John D. Rockefeller did for the oil industry. Oil became a useful product only in the middle of the 1800s. Rockefeller was part of a group of businessmen who built an oil processing center in Ohio. It was so successful that Rockefeller gave up his other business interests. He put all his money into oil production. He formed the Standard Oil Company of Ohio. John D. Rockefeller's new company used the same aggressive business methods as Andrew Carnegie. Rockefeller bought control of other oil processing companies. He started price wars that forced his competitors out of business. Most important, Rockefeller made a secret deal with the railroads. The deal greatly reduced his transportation costs. This permitted him to crush his competition. Before long, he controlled 95% of the oil processing industry in the United States.
As with steel and oil, America's railroads were an extremely important business in the 1800s. In fact, they were the nation's biggest business. They were as important as automobiles and airplanes are to the American economy today. Before the Civil War, most railroads were east of the Mississippi River. Most were small lines. In the years after the war, four major railroads got control of almost all the lines in the east, and they began building new lines in the west.
The first rail line to cross the nation was completed in 1869. It was built by two companies. One company started from the east and went west. The other went in the opposite direction. Finally, after 6 years of back-breaking labor, the two work teams met in northern Utah. They connected the rail lines with a golden spike. It was a great moment in the nation's history. Now, at last, the two coasts of the United States were united by a single line of metal rail. It was like the day 100 years later when the first American walked on the moon.
Like the steel and oil industries, the railroad industry also had its stories of intense business competition. In this case, the most influential man was Cornelius Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt already was rich from the shipping industry. Now, he formed the New York Central Railroad. It was the largest railroad in the East. Cornelius Vanderbilt tried to take over the railroad industry. He was not as successful as Andrew Carnegie with steel, or John D. Rockefeller with oil. A group of other rich railroad owners blocked his plans. But Vanderbilt did succeed in winning a great amount of power and influence.
Vanderbilt and the other new leaders of industry were powerful, and they let others know it. They sometimes made statements about how they did not have to obey the law. Other powerful men thought the same way. Some were officials elected or appointed to serve in the federal government. Political power blinded them to their responsibility to be honest and fair to the public. As a result, the Republican Party lost public support. The blame was placed on Ulysses Grant.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.